My camera died. I'm gonna do two episodes on my phone whilst I let it charge.
I too don't shave before every video. It's like we're brothers.
Episode 6, over in America now. I'll start by agreeing with Graham Hancock. Obviously, it's a tragedy how many native sites have been destroyed across America. People too, obviously. But, you know, thinking of archaeology and the history that was lost, it's terrible, really terrible.
Am I the only one that's getting dizzy from all of this camera moving back and forth? Anyway, hello and welcome back to Dedunking. And yes, we're doing episode 6 of Stefan Milo responding to Graham Hancock's Ancient Apocalypse, and Dan does the thing, and here we go. And out the gate, I've got to agree with Stefan, agreeing with Graham, that it was pretty crappy what happened to the Native Americans in this part of the world. The loss of life, obviously, being first and foremost, but when we're having a discussion about archaeology, of course, it's a big deal that we don't have a lot of records that we had just a few hundred years ago, but of course, a bunch of overzealous religious nut jobs decided to burn everything down, and I'm sure that I'll get some apologists bitching about me saying that in the comments section. Not sorry.
First site we visit is Poverty Point. Huge, massive site down in Louisiana. It's a series of mounds connected by concentric rings. Covers absolutely acres. It's massive, massive place. It's the same argument that we've heard in all the other episodes. The alignment of Poverty Point matches various alignments in the sky. Graham thinks these are, you know, seeds and knowledge from Atlantis. I don't.
And after my last response video and all of the intellectual dishonesty that I had to deal with there, this is like a breath of fresh air. Not only is Stefan being, like, legitimately honest about this and saying, you know, this is compelling to Hancock, or it's not compelling to me, and there it is. It's actually something you don't see a lot of people do when they're having discussions like this, if they take the side of mainstream science or whatever. When they have discussions amongst each other, those types will very much be like, oh, you know, we don't know, we're not sure, we're, you know, this is a hypothesis, this is a work in progress. But when they have a discussion with a pyramidiot like me, or they're talking about Graham Hancock, it's usually like, we know, we understand, this is well established. They quit hedging their bets and they just, like, try to kick you out of the circle. So this is really nice to see.
A funny moment with the manager of the site, Mark Brink Jr., about the purpose of these circles, these sort of circles of post holes that they find across Poverty Point, and about whether these had any astronomical significance if they're aligned 20 points. Mark Brink does not think so. We don't know why, because they cut it out annoyingly. I would love to know why he didn't think that, but we won't know.
You know, I'm also curious to hear what his reasoning is, and I'm not trying to be contrarian. I'm just really wondering what his reasoning is. So I actually called the Poverty Point site, and I'm waiting to hear back from them. And when I do hear back, I'll post a short and put a thing down below or whatnot. I'm sure they'll get back to me, because the Graham Hancock stuff has definitely got all these places a buzz with phone calls and people hammering them for information. I saw that last time when I reached out to Serpent Mound. They got back to me pretty damn quick. So hopefully I'll hear back from them in the next day or three.
And then Graham tries this funny gotcha moment where he's like, why do you think the people of this Poverty Point weren't interested in the sky? And Mark's like, what? I never said that. I bet they were. And, you know, but we don't know what the circles are for. We just don't know. Again, there's such a contrast between how Graham says archaeologists and historians are and how they actually act. You know, he just freely admits we don't know, which is true.
You know, the first time I watched this, I kind of felt like Hancock was in the wrong there, too. But then watching it again, they edited this. They could have put this together however they wanted. And Hancock pushes against the guy, and when he pushes back, he's very honest. We don't know. And the way that Hancock pushed against him was combative, but it's not out of character for him for the show. So I am not a fan of gotcha games. So I still don't like seeing that clip. It still kind of rubs me the wrong way. But I do have to say that if he was being dishonest about this, he totally could have edited this 101 different ways. But instead, he kept it legit. So I agree with Stefan that it's kind of messed up that he played this gotcha game. At the same time, I don't think that's a point against his take on archaeologists that he puts this in there. Sometimes archaeologists will admit they don't know. Other times archaeologists will dig their heels in and fight tooth and nail. Clovis first, for example.
In defense of Mark Brinks here, I will say that when we can't see the monument, we're just left with the silhouette of a circle, post holes of a circle. We could probably make it align to anything, couldn't we? We could probably make it align to anything we wanted to. It is hard when the monument is gone, when we can't ask anyone what they were doing, how to align a circle up to points, a circle of just post holes. So, Graham thinks that's some sort of calendar. Could be absolutely correct. We'll never know.
Well, in the off chance that Stefan actually watches this, I'm going to try to edumacate him a little bit on archaeastronomy. Yeah, if you got two holes in the ground, you could line them up to all kinds of different things, especially if you've got all of history to choose from, right? But if you got a bunch of holes in the ground, like Woodhenge, for example, they start putting things together, right? Like Stonehenge has got a bunch of rocks in the ground, which effectively is the same kind of thing, right? If it was just a stick sticking up out of the ground or a rock sticking up out of the ground, you still have the same basic thing, right? We're able to discern a lot from this using math. It's like the basic archaeoastronomy. They'll go through and they'll, like, if there's 12 holes there, they start aligning them to a bunch of different things, and they start using math to whittle out what will and won't work. And to say that we'll never know, well, I really take issue with that personally. Like, we've got people using now, from what I understand it, it's like similar to phylogenetics, where they like to use that same similar idea or algorithm to, like, figure out where myths have come from. There's a channel called Krakenfort that I've been watching for a while that I haven't fact-checked this guy ever once, so if you go watch him and he's just complete bullshit, I apologize, but he doesn't seem like it. He seems like he's pretty intelligent, and the stuff that he says seems pretty well-researched and fleshed out, and so I just haven't bothered, you know. He's got that veneer of academic authority that I've spoken of before, so I just kind of left it go. But he talks about these kinds of, you know, them figuring out where myths came from. Anyway, picture over here, link in the description. He's worth watching. Go check him out. My point is, the things that we thought we could never figure out, frequently we can figure out. So the way that Stefan just shows, like, this incredulity of this whole process is kind of, well, it's bothersome to me, man. It's like, fucking science gets better over time, man. We figure shit out all the time that we thought was never going to be figured out before just 20 years ago. So, yeah.
Then we move on to Serpent Mound. Graham starts off by being annoyed that the sign outside says Serpent Mound dates to 1000 AD, whereas some radiocarbon dates say it might date to 300 BC. This is true. The dating of the site is currently debated. The updating of the sign, I don't really think archaeologists are to blame for that. There's lots of signs all around the world that could probably do with being updated.
Well, first of all, I got to point out that it's kind of weird that you'll go after Hancock for putting out false information, but this thing that has that same veneer of academic authority, it's a sign that you go to an official government place and it has this sign there, you would think that it's fucking right. So why are none of y'all railing against that with any of the same kind of fervor? Probably because it's the same reason that I'm not picking on people with 1/10 your sub count, right? You give views. Anyway, a little bit of honesty there for y'all behind the curtain scenes. Anyway, I'll give you a perfect example of how big of a problem this actually is. Now, I was going to do a short on a thing that, where I grew up, they have a thing called the Piasaw Bird in Illinois, right across the Mississippi River from the St. Louis. They found this long time ago. They saw this dude that was going down the Mississippi River, saw these two paintings of these monsters that the natives had done actually like 400 years before he went by there, they think. The paintings have long been quarried away. The limestone was ripped apart during like Civil War era, but they have this painting that they keep there now, and they've got one of those similar plaques. And it's called the Piasaw Bird. Hell, I went to a junior high school. Mascot was a Piasaw Bird. The thing weren't a fucking bird, man. It didn't even have wings. The story that it shows on this thing, that it was like this bird came down and like, it's kind of like Smaug, right? From the Lord of the Rings. This bird came down and like would eat people, and he was eating so many of them and flying up into the cliffs that eventually they like fought with it and the poison arrow into its chest and all this crap. But the story was cooked up by some freaking European dude in like the early 1900s. And it's put on all these plaques, and the thing didn't even have wings, man. There is something actually to be complained about there. We have legitimate, serious disinformation going out to the public in the form of these plaques that are on all of these landmark sites all across the country, especially in the Midwest, apparently. I was going to do a video on the thing because it's like, hey, check it out. It seems like there's this memory of this Paleolithic bird that was, you know, we know there were those terror birds running around. There might have been similar things. But no, no, no. It's all made up bullshit.
But Graham wants to push this site back 10,000 years because he believes Serpent Mound is illustrating a comet flying across the sky, and he believes a comet impact caused the Younger Dryas. So he wants to project it back 10,000 years in time. He also believes the alignment of the mound would be better 10,000 years in the past.
Now, this is what happens when you dismiss archaeoastronomy. No, he doesn't think that it's the comet first and then that it might be the alignment lines up better. That's what he thinks it is to begin with. The alignment lining up better to him says that it is probably from that date. The comet would be incidental. But something I want to point out really quick. It's spoken of in Ancient Apocalypse. Lower Jackson Mound is about 5 miles south of Poverty Point. And it makes this straight line right through the mounds at Poverty Point. It's in alignment with that site, and it's 5 miles away. So a small degree of difference in one of these earthwork sites, it is something that's actually potentially kind of a big deal. So when Hancock looks at this Serpent Mound, and he says it's 2 degrees off there, that is something that actually is significant, which will be dismissed down the road. But
let's take the date of 1000 AD, when people are for sure still renovating Serpent Mound and, you know, using it as a ritual center. That is about the time that Halley's Comet flew through the sky. Famously, it flew through the sky in 1066, just before the Norman invasion of England, is considered a big omen. And, so the date, if Serpent Mound is intended to illustrate a comet, and we don't know that, but if it is, 1000 AD approximately is a good date for it to have been made.
Oh, I like Stefan. I do have to point out the double think here, and I'm certain it's not intentional, but notice how hard he is on evidence when it comes to, like, there's a bunch of holes in the ground. How can we ever know what this could possibly line up to? There's too much variance here. There's too much degree of, I don't know. Okay, fine. But now he's going to say, well, this was built around 1000 AD. We know Halley's Comet came through there around 1000 AD, so maybe this is Halley's Comet. First of all, Halley's Comet comes through, like, every 75 years, man. So, I mean, it could have been 925 AD or one. I mean, you see what I'm saying? It's like 75 years off. Second, the margin of error on carbon dating is 2-5% in general. So at 1,000 years, you're talking 20 to 50 years. That's half the fucking timeline there. You can't say this had fuck all to do with a comet that was in that small little timeline. Hancock's positing it's a world ender, so it would be talked about 1,000 years later, potentially, or at least 100 years later, you would assume. But Halley's Comet, this thing come around here for 75 years, man. It's been recorded history going back way long before this. To posit it's Halley's Comet, to me, is like just spitballing. Just, well, you know, sure. Let me be clear about this. It's not that it's completely just spitballing. To say that a comet and a serpent on the ground would, you know, emulate that, that does make a lot of sense, especially when it has some demonstrable astronomical alignments, even if it's just solar alignment. But in order to pin it on Halley's Comet, and you're doing so by date when the margin of error basically sucks up all the play in the date, and you're left with just basically guessing. That's not science, man, and you're well aware of that when it comes to looking at holes in the ground. But when it comes to this, you're like, oh, well, you know, if it is going to be a comet, it's probably this guy because of the dating, but the dating doesn't support that at all.
As for those earlier radiocarbon dates, 300 AD, we don't know what, if it was renovated later on at 1000 AD, we don't know what they changed. Maybe they added that sort of egg-shaped comet at the front of the serpent. We don't know. That's kind of stuff is really hard to say. But it is funny that 1000 AD does line up with a known comet that regularly flies across the sky.
Let's be fair. This is the kind of thing we could discern if we went crazy excavating at Serpent Mound. But we're not going to do that for obvious reasons, as we'll discuss down the road. It's still a religious site. So there's people that now consider that site sacred. You can't really go digging around in their fucking church, right? So, duh. But this is the kind of thing we could discern, so to just say we don't know and we can't know, that's not exactly true. We could know, we're just, like, being respectful and not, like, pissing on people's fucking religions any more than we've already done in the last few hundred years. For some reason, maybe it's a good idea that we stop where we have. Oh, call me crazy.
As for the alignments of the other bends in the serpent, you know, corresponding to different moments in the year, I don't think archaeologists have a massive problem with that. You know, as Graham portrays, just again, how do we know? How do we know? It definitely could be that. And I think that's a pretty good hypothesis, honestly, because people do like to track the passage of time.
All right, so I looked into the astronomical alignments as they go with the coils because the mouth is a little bit more stable, right? There's a pretty distinct point at the mouth, and the coils themselves are, well, there's a big long chunk there. It is kind of hard to determine exactly where the point is you're supposed to measure from. And I'm not the only person that's had this issue. The archaeologists and archaeoastronomers that have looked at this have also said, they kind of would work, but you'd need more going on there. You'd need another focal point. They're aimed in that direction. If you could imagine, as I've used before, a sight as a metaphor, with the sight is much larger than the point that it's trying to shoot at. You've got the sight, but you've got no reticle inside of it, so it's hard to aim. Well, this is where, like, the work of Alexander Thom, who is the guy that actually got archaeoastronomy to become, you know, something that wasn't just a pastime for rich folk, and it actually became a bona fide branch of science, albeit one that's still highly contested today. The way he did it was actually predicting that he would find an observation platform for a thing that was, like, it looked like it had a solar alignment, but it was too far down to be seen. There was a hill obscuring it. So if you went up the side of this other hill, there was an observation platform, and he predicted it would be there. A few other predictions like that have happened, but the same kind of thing could happen here. There could be either an observation platform and or another focal point in the distance across from that observation platform. The kind of stuff, again, that we can't really do the research and still be respectful to the people that consider that place sacred, so we're just kind of left in the dark there. But this is how we would go about finding out. We absolutely could do some research and determine whether or not those coils were used as solar observation points as well, or whether any alignment with them might be incidental, because again, they're huge. There's a lot of play there. There's no way to misquote Milo from Indie Minute Man. You can't aim a coil at a star.
As for the alignment, it's 2 degrees off, pointing towards this valley, is where, you know, the solstice is. It's either the solstice or the equinox. The hard thing with an earth mound like Serpent Mound is earth can slip and slide and do all sorts of things. It's hard to arrange earth precisely rather than a stone. I think a stone is easier to place precisely than an earth mound. I think that's my own bias there. So for earth mound, I would honestly forgive it being 2 degrees off, especially when you consider the fact that it's been renovated many times, probably. It's certainly been, like, renovated back at the end of the 19th century, when people finally started to care a little bit about preserving native sites. So I would forgive an earthen mound being 2 years, 2 degrees off. I certainly wouldn't feel the need to project it back in time 10,000 years to account for 2 degrees of angle.
Earlier we were speaking about Poverty Point, and 5 miles to the south of Poverty Point is Lower Jackson Mound, and that is in perfect alignment with the principal three mounds at Poverty Point. 5 miles away. 2 degrees is absolutely a big deal when it comes to these things. The people that built these things were perfectly capable of aiming them exactly where they wanted to aim them. Yes, there's been work done over the years, but the fact of the matter is the jaw of that thing is very well preserved, it seems. You can point to the focal point of the center of that jaw, and if it's 2 degrees off, and if 2 degrees would put it back to where it needs to be for Hancock's hypothesis, that is intriguing and shouldn't be just discarded by saying, well, maybe it could be something else. Because again, we have examples in the vicinity of a very good alignment over a very long distance. So 2 degrees off of something, let's put it this way. Poverty Point and Lower Jackson Mound cannot see each other, but they still got that alignment the same. They absolutely could see the sun rising on their solstice or equinox, whichever one I forget really quick, but they, when they measure it at that fucking snake, they can absolutely measure that thing once a year perfectly. They can never do that between Lower Jackson Mound and Poverty Point. They've got to do that based completely on alignment. So yeah, 2 degrees is a big deal.
Now, Graham is not happy with the current custodians of Serpent Mound, though, because they refused his access to film, and which he describes as censorship.
And here's another point you got to give to Stefan for, like, being observant. So many people have just been like, oh, Hancock said he was banned from the place, but actually he was only banned from filming, lol, lol, lol. Well, Hancock specifies that in the video, and all you have to do is watch the damn thing, but there is a little soundbite that's been passed around a lot, and most people haven't bothered to watch Ancient Apocalypse, so props to him for actually getting this part right, where so many others have not.
Is it censorship? Do archaeologists practice censorship? Is Graham Hancock being censored here? Best take on this I heard was from Miles Greb from the Plastic Plesiosaur podcast, which he does with Trey the Explainer. They had me on as a guest. We've been talking about Graham Hancock's show. He put it like this. It's not really academic censorship because Graham isn't proposing a study to be done. He's not submitting a plan for research or anything like that. He just wants to film a documentary. So it's not really academic censorship in that sense.
I don't recall Hancock ever claiming that it was academic censorship. I just remember him crying about being censored. And yes, of course, it's a sacred site to living people, so they have all the rights in the world to discuss this. I actually called the site when I did my response to Mini Minuteman and got confirmation that, yeah, the tribes absolutely have a say in this. That email that Hancock shows is accurate. But I do believe that their rejection is based mostly on a misrepresentation of Hancock's position.
I think the key piece of context here that Graham misses out is that Serpent Mound is a religious site, still very important to modern native people, modern Indians in the area. And for some reason, there are some like extremist Christian groups who believe it's like a portal to hell. They turn up and they pray and they claim it in the name of Jesus, and the native groups really dislike that. They really, really dislike that.
Wow. Yeah. I would imagine they would really fucking dislike that. Holy shit, man.
And rightly so, because then it wouldn't be allowed to go into a church and perform their traditional rituals. And Serpent Mound is a religious site to them. You know, when we view it in that context, we can be empathetic to the idea that they don't like someone coming along and saying that the idea behind this mound was you know, the product of another civilization. Empathetic and understand why that would annoy them.
You could especially understand why that would annoy them, especially when they're always told that it's like, oh, it's supposed to be white European people that did all this. But that's not what Hancock would say. He's got two places that he would posit that this Atlantis came from in the modern day.
One of them is the Amazon. Another is the Sahara Desert.
I'm not real, real good with genetics, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that neither one of those is known for white Europeans. So there's like a 50-50 chance that his lost civilization is Native American. If they knew that, they might have a little bit of a different take on letting him film there.
Graham calls it an archaeological site, which is true, obviously, in one sense. But, you know, to them, it's not just an archaeological site. It's a religious site. And considering the big spiel Graham gave at the start of the episode about how many native sites have been destroyed, how much information has been lost, blah, 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 you would think he would be a bit more sensitive to that. You would think he could understand that position better. I don't know. I think it was a bad look to be hating on the fact that he wasn't allowed to film at Serpent Mound. If he really wanted to get to the bottom of the mystery there, I think he would have to work with native people in building like some trust and in building a plan to do some proper research, not just film a big budget documentary.
I will completely agree that it is tone deaf as hell of him to be complaining about that like he does without prefacing it like we are complaining about the fact that, you know, this is a fucking living church to a lot of people. So what the hell are you doing, man? Come on. They don't want you carving up their fucking pulpit. It's still a place that's sacred to these people. So, yeah, this is pretty tone deaf. However, what you say there at the end about working with the native tribes and putting together everything, let's be very clear. Based on the things that the email said to Hancock, what he would have to do was make sure that his predetermined hypothesis before he went in there to start looking around was something that they would support. Okay, so that's a big deal. You can't call it academic censorship per se, because Hancock's not an academic. However, if you don't think that that's a degree of censorship that is pointed at academia, you're not really looking at the situation in situ, you're in total. You're looking at it in this little tiny little specks of it. You're not seeing the forest for the trees, as they say. This is saying, if you want to fucking dig around here, buddy, you better be turning spades in the right direction, because if you're not looking the direction we want them to, we're not going to let you look. And as those who've watched multiple videos of mine in this series by now will be aware, we see this in Malta with the teeth. We see the opposite of this in Java with the Indonesian people, the Indonesian government wanting Atlantis to be Indonesia. This isn't an isolated case. All across the world, people want to believe that their shit is their shit. If you go to Egypt and start telling the Egyptians that their pyramids were, even the ground plan, even the fucking site was picked by Atlanteans, they don't want nothing to do with it. And you can understand why, but you can also understand how that gets in the way of looking for truth. If you look at this without blinders on, like if you put all these emotional baggage between you and the truth, yeah, you're not going to see any of what I just said. But if you strip all that away and you're like, you're actually just like, okay, where are we going with this? In my opinion, you should have no trouble seeing that there are a lot of obstacles in the way that are based on nationalism, cultural pride, etc., etc., etc. It has fuck all to do with finding the truth.
Final part of this episode, though, is setting up to discuss the Younger Dryas, which he describes as an apocalyptic event that humanity barely survived. He absolutely has to portray the Younger Dryas this way. For Hancock, the Younger Dryas is the reason why every trace of his civilization is gone. Every single trace. And so for him, it has to be the most apocalyptic event that humans have lived through. For archaeologists, don't share that opinion. the civilization was wiped out. So we can take a lot more nuanced look at the Younger Dryas and its effect on people. But for Graham and people that believe in Atlantis, it has to be the biggest cataclysm to end all cataclysms, because otherwise, how can we explain the lack of evidence for this civilization? Think about it now. This is an 8-part series. We're at the end of episode 6. Still not a single artifact from this civilization. That's hard to explain. Younger Dryas has to be terrible.
The beginning of Stefan's response, when he goes to respond to episode 1 of Ancient Apocalypse, he says that he's going to give, like, the best benefit of the doubt, that he's going to be charitable, basically, when he's discussing this and not go after, like, the, you know, aliens flying around spaceships and shit version. But he keeps hammering on about artifacts when, as you guys know, I'm going to point out, he wouldn't do that with the Sea Peoples. And this is kind of a big deal, because we're talking about over 10,000 years ago, and we're talking about people that probably worked in, like, stone and metal, and we're talking about people to be worshipped as gods. So expecting anything of them, of theirs, it's like, where's the Ark of the Covenant, man? Do you think the Ark of the Covenant didn't exist? Well, where is it? Do you think it didn't exist at all? You think it's bullshit? Well, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? It's that kind of bullshit is what it feels like. It's like, dude, we have, like, the clamps and the nubs that cross the Pacific, right? When you have these kinds of things, when you have some fingerprints of the gods, when you have some things that actually are compelling. But you'll notice that these guys never talk about that kind of shit, man. They ain't going to talk about the stuff that actually is compelling, because then they're going to have to make a nuanced video. For all their talk of nuance, they'll have to make a nuanced video and look at both sides of the situation, which apparently is left to fucking electricians in this day and age on the internet, which, Stefan, I love you, man. And you're like a great dude as far as the shit that you make, by and large, I have liked for a very long time. But what is this crap? This is not science. This is not science-minded. This is not even-keeled. This is not fair. This is not intellectually honest. This is picking one side over the other. Anyway, thanks for watching this far. Don't forget to hit the like and the subscribe and press all the pretty bell buttons. And let's go out in the song.
Sea peoples, where do they go? Only Atlanteans know. Sea peoples.